A will is the usual tool for passing assets on to your heirs when you die. But for some things, you don't need a will at all. I am Rob West. It's true. You can ensure that certain assets go straight to your heirs without passing through probate. Valerie Hogan joins us today with a crash course on beneficiary designations and why you want to use them. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our guest Valerie Hogan is an attorney, a certified financial planner, and a member of Kingdom Advisors, so she has all the bases covered. Valerie, great to have you back.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Absolutely. Valerie, let's just dive right in. Why are beneficiary designations important?
Right. Well, very few things in estate planning are quick, easy, and free. So this is one of the very few that we can actually say that about. Using a beneficiary designation, believe it or not, is an easy way to transfer accounts and assets and even insurance benefits when you pass. But they're important to keep up to date, and they take priority over or transfer before or outside of estate planning documents like a will and a trust. They do skip probate, but they do also remain private like a trust would.
Yeah, and that's a really important distinction. Now, what are some of the keys to remember about designating beneficiaries?
I think the first one is where you look to do these things. You're going to look at all kinds of accounts, like your checking account, savings account, maybe IRA-type assets, 401ks, 403bs, and even life insurance policies. So you'll want to make sure you look at all these types of accounts that allow making a beneficiary designation. Many times you'll find them by being able to log into that account and look for, can I make a beneficiary designation? And many times you'll even be able to change that or add it online. So you're going to want to name primary and contingent beneficiaries. And you're going to want to keep these things updated whenever there's a birth, death, marriages, divorces. You'll want to read the fine print. Don't just fill in names. You're going to want to see if you're making a primary beneficiary designation or a contingent beneficiary designation in that slot. Then you want to coordinate that with your will or trust. You want to beware of naming individual beneficiaries for particular assets because those accounts could grow unevenly. You don't want to name your estate necessarily as the beneficiary. That could require the account to go through probate. You're going to want to check on that. Many times it's efficient to name it as a successor beneficiary or contingent beneficiary. And you're going to want to consult your attorney or CPA before naming that trust as beneficiary. You want to understand what's going to happen with the tax implications.
Now, Valerie, you mentioned that assets may grow disproportionately, and that's a key point here because if we name a beneficiary and one asset grows quicker than another, we may no longer be honoring our wishes as to how we want our estate distributed. Is that right?
Yes. For example, if you had that designated, you have, for example, three children and you named one-third, 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 or maybe a fourth to charity and one-fourth to each of the rest of the children. But you start naming this account for one, and as of this time, they're all even. Those could grow very differently if one has, let's say, a public stock in it versus maybe bonds or is more like a savings type account. One could grow a whole lot bigger, and so if your wishes were to divide that up evenly, it may not end up that way in the end.
Yeah, which is why to coordinate with your overall estate plan as well as to keep those updated. Now, is there ever a reason, Valerie, not to designate beneficiaries?
I just did a simple answer, no. Yeah. I don't believe okay. There ever is a good reason to do that because that's going to leave this open to interpretation and it could be a bit confusing and it's going to let someone else decide. Sometimes that would be the courts. So yes. At the very least, you would want to point that toward your documents. Ideally, you'd like to name a person.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I expect the biggest mistake here is just setting it and forget it. So maybe one more time we'll mention, keep these updated. Valerie, this was so helpful. Thanks for that crash course on beneficiary designations. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
That's Valerie Hogan, attorney, CFP, and member of Kingdom Advisors. Much more to come just around the corner, including your questions. Stay with us.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Martin Luther King Day, a federal holiday in the U.S. every year on the third Monday of January. Dr. King envisioned a future when, in his words, his four little children would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. The speech was filled with scripture, like Amos 5:24, which says, "Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream." Both then and now, we live in a world filled with injustice. So much pain, war, death, human beings exploited. This is why we pray, "Maranatha, come, Lord Jesus." Get daily encouragement from God's Word with Anchor Devotional. Try it out. Visit getanchor.com.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Like many areas across the nation, here at the AFR headquarters in Tupelo, Mississippi, we're experiencing winter weather that's more severe than usual. Because of that, our shows today are pre-recorded, allowing our staff to be home safe with their families. We hope you'll find these best of broadcasts informative and encouraging. Thanks for understanding, and God bless.
What if your everyday purchases could support biblical causes? With the all-new Cash Rewards Visa card from Christian Community Credit Union, a portion of every purchase goes to ministries that spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children. Plus, earn unlimited 1.5% cash back. Visit joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our team is away today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance, and we'll be going to those here in just a moment. Let me also remind you that the advice that I give each day on this program is general in nature. We offer principles and ideas that apply at a high level. They are not personalized, so that's why you should always seek professional financial advice. And if you'd like to find a professional who shares your values, we, of course, here at Faith and Finance Live recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. These are men and women who've met high standards, and they've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision-making. You can find one at faithfi.com. Hey, before we dive into our phone calls today, let me remind you, here at the start of the year, folks will often set goals, resolutions that they'd like to accomplish, and many of those, often near the top of the list, involve your finances, perhaps paying off debt or getting that spending plan in place. The key to financial success, once we understand that God owns it all and we accept our role as steward or manager and put money into the category of tool to accomplish God's purposes, the key to financial success, really, success starts with living within our means. We have to have a plan that allows us to dial our spending in such that we're spending less than we're bringing in. That margin is key to not only
only our just emotional and spiritual health, but also our ability to accomplish our financial goals. Well, you'll never be able to live within your means effectively unless you have a spending plan. So that's often the beginning point. And if you'd like to perhaps renew your spending plan this year, or maybe for the first time begin one, there's no better place to start than the FaithFi app. We'd love for you to download our app today. It's a beautiful smartphone interface, very simple to use. There's actually three approaches to creating a spending plan, so you'll find one that fits your personality. And with Mint going away at the end of last year, it's a great time to check out a brand new solution. By the way, in the FaithFi app, not only can you set up your spending plan, but you can join a community of more than 60,000 stewards on the journey with you, enjoying the content, asking questions, sharing ideas in our community, and it's all there for you to check out today when you go to faithfi.com. Just click app or head over to your Apple App Store or Google Play Store and just search for FaithFi, Faith and Finance. All right, let's dive into your phone calls today. I'm ready, and we're going to begin in Clemson, South Carolina. Mike, go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for your ministry and your staff's ministry. It's a blessing. And
well, thank you.
I would like to ask about the different custodial accounts. I have enough money to actually get an advisor, a CKA, to help me, and it'll be greatly a big help to me. And I think I found one close by, and he does use Charles Schwab. And I'm just curious about the different custodial accounts. Are they pretty much, can you have a faith-based type of investing? And I was just curious. I know you can't be perfect in all your investing and everything, but generally, would I be able to stay away from like the Planned Parenthood or pharmaceutical drugs that cause abortions and, yeah, you know, things along that line? And I'm just wondering if Schwab, Charles Schwab, would be a good one, you know, as far as,
So, absolutely, yeah, Mike. Yeah. It's a great question. And yeah, you'll find that Schwab and Fidelity, among others, are some of the more popular brokerage firms that a fee-only registered investment advisor might use. Others would include Edward Jones or LPL or even the big wirehouses like Merrill Morgan and others. And yeah, you absolutely will have plenty of access, or your advisor will have plenty of access to the faith-based investing fund families. And the exciting thing is, Mike, that this whole space of faith-based investing, that is selecting investments, either selecting individual stocks or buying a mutual fund that is faith-aligned, that whole space of faith-based investing is really just taking off. I mean, there's 55 new products, so new ETFs, new mutual funds, just in the last 3 years. And these are world-class investments, getting phenomenal returns, very consistent with what their peers, taking a secular approach, might find, but where they're intentionally aligning the investment selections, the deployment of capital, your capital, with Christian values. And that includes both avoiding companies that are misaligned with your values. You mentioned a few of those categories, or in addition to that, they will also select intentionally companies that are promoting human flourishing or, really focusing on a kingdom impact outcome. So, yes, Schwab will be a great platform for that. The key is to have that advisor who has, as a part of his or her practice, the ability to select faith-based investments, based on your values and working with you to build a portfolio that's consistent with that. But nothing about Schwab would prevent the advisor from doing that.
Okay, that's wonderful. Okay, well, thank you very much for that input.
All right, Mike. God bless you, my friend. Thanks for being on the program today. Let's go to Ohio. Hi, Christy. How can I help?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for your call.
I just wanted some information about my son. He's 17. He lives at home. This is his first job, and he makes about $30,000 a year, and he has no bills, and he's wanting to know what he can do to invest his money to make money off of that money, to,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
grow his money.
Well, I love that he's thinking about that now. I think the key is for him to start learning early God's way of handling money. So when you're done here, hold on the line. I'm going to send you a copy of Howard Dayton's book, Your Money Counts. I want you to give that to him as our gift to him, just to begin to introduce him to not only wise, you know, money management skills, but also how God's word speaks to just the whole topic of finance and how we ought to think about managing God's money. Secondly, I think the next step is to really earmark this savings that he's accumulating, and that's great, for specific goals. So he might have an emergency fund bucket where he's got maybe $1,000 or $2,000, because he probably doesn't have a lot in the way of expenses, that's just purely for the unexpected. And then he might have a couple of additional savings buckets that are for a specific purpose. So he might be looking down the road to when he, you know, is moving into his first apartment, or he wants to buy a house, or he needs to replace a car. If he has any of those, he ought to save for those along with the emergency fund in a high yield savings account. He can get 4.5% right now with an online bank with FDIC insurance, and at least he's making some money, even though it's liquid and safe. Now, beyond that, given that he's working, the very best tool is a Roth IRA. And, you know, this will be a way that he can put in after tax dollars into a Roth IRA. And, you know, this year, 2024, the contribution limit has gone up $500. So he can now put in up to $7,000 in 2024, as long as he has that much in earned income, which it sounds like he does. And what I'd probably do is just open an account at Fidelity or Schwab. He could use one of their robo-advisors like the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios, very low cost, and he can even set up an automatic transfer into that Roth IRA every month, and then it would systematically invest it in some indexed ETFs. He could also look at what I talked to the last caller about, and that is some of the faith-based investing funds, which, again, there's some wonderful funds out there like Eventide and One Ascent and Guidestone and Timothy and others that are specifically choosing investments that align with your Christian values, and they have wonderful performance. And you could find those fund families if you click on the show when you visit our website at faithfi.com. But I like this idea, Christy. I'd start with the emergency fund, then planned savings buckets, and then finally a Roth IRA, and have him set up a systematic contribution there. Hey, stay on the line. We'll get your information to send you that book. We'll be right back.
Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days we've been banned twice, and is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day, banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the Faith and Finance program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
How do you deal with it when the person that you're caring for doesn't show gratitude? We're not in bondage to other people's gratitude. He came with no thought of our gratitude. He loved us while we were enemies. Who were we to withhold that which was given so lavishly to us?
Join Peter Rosenberger on Hope for the Caregiver, Saturdays at 7 a.m. and Sundays at 10 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
Director of the AFA Foundation, Riley Wildman.
The most rewarding thing about my job is that we get to
build relationships through our donors and our supporters and get to have that personal relationship with them.
Contact the AFA Foundation today to learn how you can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Because of my past health history, finding affordable health care was nearly impossible. But then I found CHM, where costs are not adjusted based on medical history. Christian Healthcare Ministries even provides the freedom to choose my own providers. And the best part? CHM members pray for me. Too good to be true? It's not. I'm a proud member of Christian Healthcare Ministries, and if you think it could be right for you, learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Our team is not here today, so let me just remind you not to call in, but I will also remind you that we have some great questions that we lined up in advance, so you're not going to want to miss today's broadcast. Let's head to Pennsylvania. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Well, hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is pretty precise. I just started was forced into retirement, so I'm trying to figure some things out. I have a 401k, about $40,000. I have a car debt. What's left on it is $7,000. Is there a way to withdraw slowly from the 401k and not have it being counted as income? Because that would also affect my, if my income goes up, my benefits from the state for insurance go down. Is there a way to withdraw from the 401k to avoid that being counted as income?
Yeah, there really isn't. Are you still working with this employer?
No.
You're not. Okay, so you're fully retired?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, any money, although when you get beyond 59 and a half, there's not going to be any penalty, any money that comes out as a distribution will be added to your taxable income for the year. I mean, the only way around that would have been while you were still working, you could have considered borrowing from your 401k and then you'd pay it back, although that's not ideal because you're paying it back with after-tax dollars, even though you're paying interest to yourself and it's being deposited to the account. I'm not a big fan, but that would have been a way to do that without it being taxable. But once you separate from employment, you don't have that option either. So there really isn't a way to get it out anything other than creating a taxable event. What is your age, Steve, if you don't mind me asking?
63,
okay, yeah. Once you get over 70, we could roll it to an IRA, and if you had money you were contributing to your church or to a ministry out of savings or your checking account, you could replace that with money coming out of your IRA through a qualified charitable distribution and then use that cash that you would have contributed from savings pay down the car, and that would be the only creative way that you could get that money out, because that doesn't become a taxable event through a qualified charitable distribution. But that's only available once you reach age 70 and a half. So at this point, if you want to use that money to pay off the car, it's going to have to be added to your taxable income, which, as you said, could create problems even beyond just you having to pay some taxes.
All right.
Thanks for calling, Steve. Absolutely, sir. God bless you. Let's go to Joliet, Illinois. Nancy, how can I help?
Hi, thank you so much. Happy New Year. Thank you for
having me. Happy New Year. Well, thank you.
You are most welcome. We appreciate you. In a nutshell, as my husband and I approach retirement, we are streamlining our finances, and we have been slowly, according to your advice, cutting out some of our credit cards and things like that. We don't carry a balance on any of them, but we have kind of accumulated some more over the years. And my main question is, for me, as not the main breadwinner, what is the best way to maintain my own credit? I did purchase a vehicle several years ago, and thankfully, put like $10,000 down and got 1.9%, and that I'm sure has boosted my credit score. At that time, they said my particular, I had bought it in just my own name. My score was perfect, which I was surprised to hear. But anyway, and our general score together is over 800. But I just, you know, should I just keep one credit card in my name and one in his? Is that sufficient? Or what would you suggest?
Yeah, so if you're specifically thinking about your credit score and not access to the credit card if he were to pass away, which is a whole separate issue that we can talk about in a moment, but specifically related to the credit score, you don't even need to have one in your name as long as you're an authorized user on his, because it'll be reported to your report at the same time it's reported to his with you as an authorized user. So if you didn't want to have more than one card, you could have him as the authorized user, or you as the authorized user and him as the primary, or you could hold it jointly. Either in either case, it would be reported to your credit file. And with regard to your credit score, having that, you know, active account, even if it's just a small charge every month, it's a budgeted item that you pay off in full, you know, that ongoing regular activity of you showing yourself to be an on-time payer is really key. The other key is the credit mix, which is 10% of your score. So the idea that you would have a revolving account, which is a credit card, and an installment account like a car loan, that's a, you know, that helps your credit mix because it's two different types of credit. So that would be all you need to do. Now, to my second point, though, the only issue with that, and this catches folks by surprise in some cases, you know, if something were to happen, let's say the Lord calls your husband home and you're an authorized user, now that card can't be used any longer. And although you can go out and get one in your name, it's going to take some time and it may cause a disruption. So there is a case to be made about you each having a card in your name with perhaps the other as the authorized user, even if you just use it, you know, on a very minimal basis every month. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. So that would primarily be enough. We're not planning on taking out any loans or anything, as far as we're not particularly concerned about, you know, the level of our credit score right now. But yes, that was my concern, because I just realized that I wouldn't, as an authorized user, I would not be able to use any of the credit cards that are mainly in his name, which are the higher credit limits, as him being the main breadwinner. So, but
you mean if he were to pass away?
Yes,
correct.
So if I understand you correctly, as long as we each have one in our own name, that would be sufficient.
It would, because that would mean, if, again, we're talking about something we don't want to talk about, but we got to be well planned, right? So, yeah, if he were to pass away, you would have a card that you could continue to use on an ongoing basis. If we're just talking about the credit score, you being an authorized user is sufficient, because that will be reported to your report. But as you said, in this season of life, probably not a whole lot of concern about your credit score anyway. I mean, anything above 740, you're going to qualify for the very best credit rates and terms out there. And you're probably not looking to borrow a lot of money in this season of life. So it's really a non-issue. But yeah, not a bad idea just to be mindful of it and make sure you've got a sufficient score on your own. Hey, all the best to you, Nancy. Thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Rod in Chattanooga and Stacy in Tampa, plus your question right around the corner. Stay with us.
Many in the Middle East are going through horrific circumstances and are seeking refuge in Lebanon. Heart for Lebanon is bringing them hope. And now you can help.
We endured shelling and hunger. We witnessed death everywhere.
$116 brings emergency supplies and the hope that only comes through the gospel.
I want to spend the rest of my life telling people about Jesus and his salvation.
Give now at faithfi.com/Lebanon or call 888-201-5577.
My wife and I stumbled on the AFR channel on Roku last night, and I was amazed. Not only did it give us access to American Family Radio talk programming or 24-hour AFR music, but the access was instantaneous. And AFR on Roku gives us access to AFR podcasts with archives of our favorite talk shows and special programs. We listened to the Don Wildman Memorial Show, which my wife had missed on the radio. The AFR channel on Roku. Install it free today.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit faithfi.com and click Find a CKA.
The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the perfect opportunity to prepare for God's calling on your life. It's easy to make excuses why you can't pursue what God has called you to do, but this program removes those barriers. Flexible class options, an affordable cost, and highly trusted professors. WBS is the school for you, and now is the time to take a next step and prepare for God's calling on your life. Learn more at wbs.edu. That's wbs.edu.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. This is the program where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, help you make decisions in light of God's word as you're a steward of God's resources. Let's go to Tidewater, Virginia. Joe, thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate what you do. Well, my question was about refinancing a mortgage. We're a recent home buyer, and we were able to put a significant amount down, but we're in a 30-year mortgage, right about a little over 5.5%, 5.625. About $140,000 on the house. That's about 18% of the value. And was wondering how, if you give me your perspective on how I should think about refinancing, and at what point that becomes a wise move.
Yeah, it's a great question. I love that you were able to put so much down, Joe. And yeah, I mean, obviously with rates where they are now, you're not excited about that 5.625 rate. And so it could make some sense, especially given that this is a 30-year loan, for you to refinance. Probably going to not be next year. It would probably be the year following before it would make sense. But let's talk about that. Do you anticipate, Joe, first of all, being in this home for a long time, just based on what you know today?
I do, yes.
Okay. What is your age currently?
54.
All right. So this could be, in effect, your retirement home, right?
Correct. Yes.
All right. And would you anticipate paying this off at a more aggressive rate than the 30-year amortization, or do you think you'll just let it play out, you know, with the consistent monthly payments?
We've been saving, and we're reducing the principal by about $2,000 a month. So, yes, okay. paying it off at an accelerated rate.
Okay, so $2,000 in addition to the scheduled monthly payment? Okay, great.
Yes.
And have you run the amortization schedule to see how much quicker that would allow you to pay this off?
Not that I could give you an answer. I know that I suspect that is true, but I don't know how much exactly.
Okay. I mean, let me just run some quick numbers here. It looks like that you could pay that off with an extra $2,000 a month starting this month, 5.65, 140,000, looks like 2028. So, you know, here we are 2024. So, I mean, we're talking within 4 years on your current track, you could have this paid off, you know, which is great. Now at 5.625, you know, you're going to end up paying, a total of $46,000 in interest if you were to continue this $2,000 a month. Normally, we say you'd want to be able to save 1.5%. So that would be, you know, 4.125 would be when you'd want to refinance. And if you stay on this current track, but we drop the rate to 4.125, you know, it looks like, well, excuse me, I made the mistake there. So 5.6, let me just do some numbers here real quick. Looks like your total interest is about $20,000 that you would pay, a total of $46,000, including principal and interest, but the interest-only portion would be about $20,000. And at 4.125, you would pay a total of $14,000 in interest. So you'd save about $6,000. Now, here's the kicker, though. The cost to refinance can run anywhere from 3% of the loan all the way up to 6%. So that's anywhere from $4,000 to $9,000 on a $140,000 loan. Now, I realize it's coming down quickly, and so that number will change. But if we just look today at you spending, you know, essentially, you know, $5,000, let's say on the low end to refinance it, in order to save $6,000 in interest, given how quickly you all are going to pay this off, it just doesn't make sense. So you'd probably need to save, you know, at least a couple of percentage points, and you'd need to do it in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months in order to make this make some sense. But at the end of the day, you know, you're probably going to find that just given how quickly you're trying to pay this off, there's just not a whole lot of reason for you to make the extra effort to refinance it, just given the cost that goes along with that transaction. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I appreciate you articulating that. I was wondering how that would break, according to what you and Larry Burkett and others have articulated. So thank you for answering.
Yeah, you're welcome. If you want to go, I just pulled up the calculator.net amortization schedule, and it'll allow you to play around with this, and you can put in your 30-year loan, your current rate, your extra $2,000 a month. It'll show you exactly how much total interest you're going to pay, and then you can, you know, move that rate around and just see what is that sweet spot. But we're probably not going to see rates in the fours next year. So this is a decision that, you know, you'll probably consider in 2025 at the earliest. And at that point, we'll just need to rerun the numbers and say, okay, if I'm going to spend between $5,000 and $9,000 to refinance it, what's that magic point where it makes sense for me to spend that money, because I'm going to save at least a few thousand more in interest between now and the end of 2028, which is when you'll have this thing completely paid off just based on that extra $24,000 a year you're sending. All right?
Great. Thank you, Rob.
Awesome. You're welcome. Joe, God bless you, my friend. We appreciate you calling today. Quickly to Chattanooga. Hey, Rod, how can I help?
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. Because of TV commercials, I've got two questions. If I have my credit account or credit, you know, scores all frozen, is it still wise to get something like that LifeLock thing, or is it even necessary?
You know, I'm not a big fan of that, Rod. I mean, if your information was compromised somewhere and they offered to pay for LifeLock for you, you know, just as a way of trying to, you know, make good on the fact that they allowed somebody to come in and access your information, I'd certainly take it. But if you're having to pay for that yourself, there's just not a whole lot more there, in my opinion, that they offer. Now, they may offer you some insurance if you need to, if you have identity theft that harms you financially. But apart from that, I think you know, doing what you've done, and that is, you know, freezing your credit, which means nobody can open an account fraudulently in your name because they won't be able to allow the lender to access your credit file without that PIN number. And then if you regularly pull your credit file just to monitor it, you're watching your financial accounts, your credit cards, you're looking for erroneous transactions, you know, you're changing your password regularly, you're not getting on public Wi-Fi to log into your bank or your credit card, those kinds of things, you're not clicking on links in emails or giving out your personal information over the phone, you know, those things are free, and they're probably, you know, the best things you can do to protect yourself. For me, just, you know, based on my experience, taking that extra step of paying somebody to do essentially the things I can do myself free, it's just unnecessary.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. I thought if I had my account frozen, I didn't see any sense of spending money for something along the line of LifeLock. But I've seen a lot of advertisements on TV about it, so I thought I'd call and ask. The other thing is, I've seen advertisements also for home mortgage insurance or home insurance, title insurance. So no one can take your title, whatever.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't do that one because there's really nothing they can do. Keep in mind, if somebody goes into the county records office and fraudulently changes the deed and then they try to foreclose on your home, that was fraudulent conveyance and they have no claim to your property. And you can probably contact your county records office. A lot of them are doing this now, and ask them to put an alert on your account that if anything changes with regard to your deed, you're automatically notified. So this idea that you would have some sort of title lock insurance, which is a misnomer, I think is a waste of money. Hey, Rod, thanks for your call today, my friend. We appreciate it. Hey, we're going to take our final break of the program today and then back with our final round of questions. Stay tuned.
As I say so repeatedly, the Word of God is so rich. You read something, you've read it before, and then one time you read it, and bam! Something comes out like a Sugar Ray Leonard jab, right in the eyes. Whoa, Lord, where did that come from?
The Hamilton Quarter with Abraham Hamilton III, weekday afternoons at 5 Central on American Family Radio, or grab the podcast at AFR.net.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Have you downloaded the Faith Fi app yet? You need to do that today because this is going to make your life easier. Yes, you can manage your money through the in-app envelope feature, but also plan out future goals. I want to buy a house in 5 years, and I'm on track to do that. Here's also what I like. You can connect with people around the country. It's like social media, but better. Ask a question, get an answer, and share what you're learning about money and investing. So why don't you grab your phone right now and download the Faith Fi app?
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're going to take our final set of calls here for the day, and we've got some great questions coming up. Let's go to Tampa, Florida. Hi, Stacy. How can I help?
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I had a concern about a vehicle that I have. So right now, it's financed for within 2 years. But I was in car accidents, a couple of wrecks. My last one was back in February. So, of course, that caused my insurance to be now like close to $900. So with my car payments and insurance in total, I'm paying roughly $1,300 for a car. And that's more than just one paycheck that I make in 2 weeks. So it's
Wow. Yeah. It's
not making sense for me to keep the car. So I've been talking around. I just want to know what's the best option, if I should like return the car to the loaner and just be responsible for the rest that's owned, because since I broke the lease, they add the lease on top of the financed car. So the car is worth more than what it's really worth. So I'm like really stuck in a sticky situation. I'm not really sure what to do.
All right. So you've got a lease here, and you've got 2 years left on the lease. Is that right?
No, I had a lease, but I had broke the lease at the dealership to get a finance car, because I had mentors at the time. And they advised me to do that.
Okay, and then they put that on top of this car that you financed through them. I see. So how much do you owe on this car today?
I owe about $23,000 left on the car.
Okay, and have you run a private sale, Kelley Blue Book or Edmunds value on it? Do you know what it's worth?
When the last time I did it, it was the estimate was like 11,000.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a couple of options. I mean, number one is, you know, you just continue to make the payments and you drive it until you pay it off. Obviously, just given how high it is because of the car insurance. Now, that's not going away. I mean, you could shop this around and see if, you know, another insurance carrier to win your business, you know, might come in lower. And even though it may go up over time, it might be worth shopping around. But, you know, because of your recent accident, they may or may not be able to improve that. But that's going to follow you, obviously. And so you're going to need transportation. If you were to, let's say, turn it in, and I'm not saying you necessarily should, because that's going to result in, you know, you having this deficiency balance between what they're going to sell it for at auction, which is going to be a lot lower than the $11,000, and what you owe. And if you don't pay that, then they'll seek a judgment against you. And, you know, that could get pretty messy. But let's say you were to turn in the car. What would you do to get to work and so forth? What's your plan at that point?
When I was speaking like to my mom and my boyfriend's brother, because him and I work at the same facility, it was an option like to carpool with my brother-in-law to work. But then that would mean for me like to kind of like move into my boyfriend's place. Mm-hmm. And then my mom also suggested for me to get like a scooter to drive around, because my job is only about 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
But then again, okay, like I would still have to pay for a scooter and I would have to do shopping for a scooter. But those are the only two options. And of course, using Uber and Lyft to get everywhere. No. But when I did the math, that was roughly like $1,000. Yeah.
All right. Well, I would say let's not pursue the plan to move into your boyfriend's place. Let's try to keep you on your own. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, you're going to have to get creative here. You know, maybe it's the scooter option. When you do your budget, you know, are you able, let's say you weren't to have the car payment and the car insurance, you know, do you have a surplus every month at that point?
As of right now, with me trying to pay, like, I have, like, credit cards, and I don't pay that much in rent, but, like, I do have to get my mom money to help out with rent. Like, right now, if I'm going to be frank, I only have $20 in my account right now, and I just put $35 worth of gas in my car to fill it up. And I get paid on Friday. My next paycheck is on Friday. But then that Friday, I'm going to put, like, $800 towards my car for this month's payment and last month's payment, since it was late because of Christmas and me buying presents and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a really difficult situation because there's just not a lot of money there. I mean, your expenses, I expect, are as lean as they could be, given that you're living with your mom, even though you're contributing a portion, you know, toward your housing expense. This car obviously doesn't fit into that, and you're way upside down on it. So let's do this. You know, I think it really is going to involve someone helping you kind of dig into those numbers and just trying to help you create a path forward. You know, it may involve you having to get bankruptcy protection, but that's an additional expense, even if you know, try to make good on paying all of this off over time. So I think the next step is just to, you know, have somebody walk alongside you as you get all the numbers in place, look at all of the different options, see if we can get the credit cards into a credit counseling program, see if we can work with your lender to perhaps turn this in and get you on a smaller payment plan, you know, look for a scooter, maybe somebody. Let's just start praying about this. Maybe somebody at your church would be willing to bless you with an old car. I mean, you know, we need to trust the Lord in this. You need to do your part the best you can. And let's just see how the Lord shows up in the midst of this very difficult situation. But what I would say is, let's continue to honor him with each of your decisions. So not moving in with your boyfriend, really, you know, continuing to trust him and be faithful with what passes through your hands. So you're, you know, doing your part to just live as lean as you can. Look for other opportunities to bring more income in, whether that's picking up a second job or maybe finding something you can do where you're working remotely from home so you're not having to, you know, commute and save that money. I mean, we're going to need to get creative here And, you know, obviously the Lord is going to have to intervene in a very difficult situation. So let's do this, Stacey. I'm going to ask you to hold the line, and I'm going to put one of our certified Christian financial counselors in touch with you just to work through your financial situation. There's not going to be any cost to this. We'll pick up the cost for it. And let's just see if the two of you can't come up with a plan to get you pointed in the right direction. And we're going to trust that the Lord is going to intervene as well along the way, because ultimately our trust is in Him, right? Because He is your provider, no one else. So, hey, keep us posted, and we'll be praying for you. I'll ask our faith and finance community to be praying for you as well. And thanks for your call. Let's go to New Jersey. Hi, Carmen. How can I help?
Hi, Rob. So I have my husband's FICO score. We have a credit card with the Citibank Costco card, and his FICO score under their program is reflecting like a 598 score. And so we immediately went to the three credit bureaus, and Experian is reporting that there have been no changes to his credit score. He has always had like a high 800 score. Right now he's at 826. But when they
Uh-oh. Carmen, did we lose you?
Hello?
Yeah, you're back.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Did you get any of that? Should I repeat
it? I did. No, you're good. So I heard that you went and pulled the Experian. It said no changes. Did you pull any of the other credit files?
Yes, all three of them are reporting that there have been no changes. We currently do not have a mortgage. We don't have any car payments. We pay everything to zero balance. So we've always had really high credit scores in the 820s, 830s. But
all right.
Since September, Citibank Costco card that we've had for years is all of a sudden reporting that his credit score has dropped to like 598. And I spent like a month or so trying to figure this out, going in between Experian and going in between Citibank Costco card. But they're saying that is what Experian is reporting. And Experian is telling me, no, that's not what we're reporting. You know, there's been no changes to your husband's credit score. So I'm in a quandary. I have no idea how to, handle it.
Okay.
Where next?
Yeah. So what I would probably do is go back to whoever, gave you that 500 credit score and find out what I'd get them on the phone and find out what they used to determine that. There's the Vantage score, there's the FICO score, there's three different credit bureaus. So there's a lot of different ways to get to your credit score. You don't just have one credit score. Your credit score is just based on the information in the bureau that was used running through a formula or an algorithm, and they're not all the same. So, depending on which of the three bureaus they used and depending on which company ran that score and what scoring algorithm they used can produce different scores. And so there's probably one of those three that has some information on it that's either inaccurate or there's a fraudulent account on there or an account you forgot about or didn't know about that's in arrears. There's something there that, is triggering that low credit score and you need to find it. So I would go to annualcreditreport.com. I'd pull the three reports. Don't pull the score, pull the reports from the three bureaus and just look at them. And they'll tell you at the top of the report, the three most significant things that are causing your score to drop. And you'll be able to see right there on the report what it is that the bureau is saying is working against you, if anything. And they have to give you the three factors that are working most significantly against you on the report. It's a part of every credit file. So I'd pull those files, not the score, but the files at annualcreditreport.com. Get one from TransUnion, one from Equifax, one from Experian, and just see what they're saying in your file is the most detrimental to you at this time. And if there's nothing there, then don't worry about it. Because at the end of the day, if your FICO score is over 800, you're in great shape. If you want to do a little bit more digging beyond pulling those three bureau reports, I'd find out from whoever gave you that 500 number, how do they go about pulling your credits file and get them to give you more details on the process that they used. And that may help you narrow down the options. At the end of the day, you might find that it was just an erroneous score. And maybe they just gave you bad information. But I think you'll find the answer to this, Carmen, if you do a little bit more digging. Hey, thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. That's going to do it for us. I'm grateful for my team, Devin Patrick, Robert Youngblood, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. I'm Rob West. This has been Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.